Simply Financial with Christopher Calandra, Certified Financial Planner, is an innovative, comprehensive, informative, and cutting-edge podcast that discusses financial topics ranging from personal finance, economics, politics, and personal growth. Simply Financial will cover intriguing and thought-provoking questions so that the listener can simply increase their financial IQ.
Welcome to the Simply Financial Podcast. This is Christopher Calandra, your host. This is episode number 45 of season number 2. On today's episode, I have a guest with me. It is Mike Giardina, a partner and attorney at Henry & Federer. He specializes in estate planning and elder care. He and I have worked together recently on a pretty complex situation, and I have been talking a lot with my clients about estate planning, making sure you have a will, your beneficiaries in order, things like that. So I thought it would be great to have Mike in. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Should I have said Michael Giardina and been more formal?
No, whatever you want to call me is fine.
All right, no problem. So what I wanted to talk a little bit about is, let's assume that most people, especially individuals that are 50 and older, let's just assume for a moment that they have some type of estate plan will. When is it a good time to review your estate plan? That's kind of one that I wanted to cover with you. So before we do that, I probably screwed it up already. But before we do that, everybody should have a will. Agreed?
Anyone over 18 should, yes.
Anybody over 18. Even
Absolutely.
If they don't have a lot of assets, they may not be married, you should still, just as an adult, have one. Go see an attorney, or in a simplest situation, they could even go on LegalZoom.com or something like that. I'm sorry. Only if it's very simple.
Right.
And so you have a plan. Now, when should you update your will and estate plan?
I'm going to first jump off of something you said.
Go ahead.
Everyone should have a will at the age of 18. And the main reason for that is, if you don't decide, then Connecticut state statute or whatever state you're living in will decide where your money goes when you die. So, which may not necessarily always be the way you want it to go. So it's very important to have a will.
So that's interesting. We were talking beforehand about our children, who are not too far in age from one another. But my daughter's a little older than yours, but she turned 18 in August, and we don't have a will for her. So we should have a will for her.
To the extent she has assets, yes.
Okay.
Even if it's a small one, why not have the will?
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you're going to use LegalZoom, then it should be quick and inexpensive, and she should have something in place.
Okay. No, that's good. That's good.
I'll give you just a quick for example.
I had a
person who passed away, a husband, didn't do a will. He had a wife and children, and he had some fairly sizable assets. And as a result, under Connecticut state law, those assets are going to get split equally between his wife and his children, as opposed to all going to the wife, which is presumably what he would have wanted.
So that's interesting, and we want to be clear, because we have listeners all over the United States, and actually, I'll say this with a lot of pride, we have an increasing number of listeners that are even outside the United States, because I have clients that are traveling, and it's kind of a funny thing. But in Connecticut, what you're saying is, if a married, let's say, a married person, male, passes away, and there's no will, the state of Connecticut has a pecking order, a priority on how assets will be dispersed. And in the Connecticut, half would go to the spouse and half would go to the children.
Yes. I mean, in simple terms.
Yeah,
it gets more complicated depending on whether there's children from a prior marriage or mm-hmm. all the children are from this marriage. But
right.
Yes.
So that's one of the great reasons why it's so important to have a will, because in lots of instances, that is not what the family would have wanted, but they're going to have to bend to the will of Connecticut law, and other states might have different rules that maybe make sense or not make sense depending on the circumstances. But if you have a will, none of that matters, because that's your chance to tell your heirs and your family what you want to have happen with your money.
Correct. And just for sake of clarity, your will only will deal with your, what I like to call, probate assets, as opposed to non-probate assets.
Okay, so listeners, probate assets... Well, non-probate assets would typically be things that have beneficiary.
Correct.
So 401ks, IRAs, annuities,
life insurance,
stuff like that.
Correct.
Okay. So back to what I thought was going to be the starting point, but wasn't. So when should you review your estate plan? If nothing changes, but a certain number of years go by, should you have your will and accompanying documents updated?
Yeah, my general rule of thumb is every 3 to 5 years from when you've executed documents, they should be reviewed. That's just a benchmark. And then on top of that, whenever there's a change in family circumstances or dynamics, or something tragic happens, or something happy happens, someone dies, a baby's born, a grandchild's born, a divorce, anything life-changing or family-oriented, you should have your will and your documents checked to make sure it still complies with what your wishes are.
So I've run into this before where pick up a client, husband and wife, let's say, and then you start working on their planning and you find out that the husband never changed the beneficiary and it's his mom.
Or his sister.
That's always a fun conversation because that doesn't really work in most instances.
No, no.
Not looked on kindly. So married, divorce, separation, change in family structure, that would include, I imagine, if there's changes in health of even the beneficiaries, like a child passes away or a spouse passes away or things like that, right?
Absolutely. Any sort of family event, a child becomes disabled, God forbid, anything along those lines.
And how important is it if like I have a daughter, so perhaps someday she'll get married and perhaps she'll take her husband's name. And so would that mean updating things because she will adopt a new last name, or that's not
that's
really
not
that
something
important?
I would, if someone called me and said my daughter got married and I want to change her because her name's changed, I would probably say if that's the only change, well, I'd love to be able to charge you to do that, but it wouldn't make any sense.
All right. And what about instances where there's a significant change in someone's finances? They come into money or they become wealthy over time. Is that also?
Absolutely. So if there's an inheritance, and that usually falls within the guidelines of someone passes away like a parent. But if there's an inheritance or you hit the Mega Millions or something along those lines, you should definitely get your estate plan reviewed.
Okay. And why is it important in the case of a divorce? You know, I don't know what the exact statistics are. We could look them up. But, you know, lots of people, unfortunately, get divorced one time, in some instances, several times. So why is it important in that case when you have different family makeups than your traditional nuclear family? Can you speak to that?
Sure. If my client is the one who's getting divorced or remarried, and if there's children from that prior marriage, there's a whole conversation that needs to be had. So, for example, if I have a client who's on his or her second marriage and has children from a first marriage, the conversation is going to take a certain path. The first question is going to be, how much do you want to leave to your second spouse of your assets, and how do you want to do it? So in that situation, if I'm married and I'm leaving everything to my new spouse, if I leave that outright to her, there's no guarantee that she's going to then leave that money to my children.
Mm-hmm.
She can leave it to whomever she wants.
Okay.
So that's usually a somewhat awkward conversation to
have. And the strategy, I would imagine, is different when you have minor children in your scenario as opposed to adult age children.
Not necessarily.
No?
No, because either way, if I'm leaving my assets to my new spouse, where that money goes after she passes away is of concern to me.
Okay.
Or should be.
And what about if there's a change, you know, we talked about a change in financial circumstances, but originally I was thinking, and I would imagine people listening to this would be thinking that it's a change of the person who is thinking about updating their estate plan. But what about if there's a change in the world of my beneficiary? So a classic example, I have two children. What are some triggers that I want to think about updating my estate plan that involve what's going on in their lives?
So oftentimes, and I think I'm going to answer this question. If not, just stop me.
I'll let you know.
Certain times people will come in, will review their beneficiary designations with them. And predominantly, it's usually a spouse, and then it's children. What I like to review with them is specifically to understand what their intentions are for that contingent beneficiary being their kids. A lot of times people will name their children, and they don't realize that if one of their children should predecease them, all of it's going to pass to the survivor. Not necessarily to the deceased child's children, if there are any.
Okay.
And they're essentially disinherited grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that conversation, which can take on a whole different...
Okay. And what about situations where the children might not be responsible with money? So the heirs of your client might not be responsible for money. It might be something that's bad behavior like drug abuse, or it might just be, you know, youthful indiscretion kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But is that something that should be addressed too when updating an estate plan?
Absolutely. That's one of the main reasons to do estate planning. Mm-hmm. That would involve a whole conversation as to, do we want to leave money outright to our children? In that situation, I would presume the answer would be no. So we'd have to update the beneficiary designations to make sure nothing passes to them directly. I would imagine in that situation, we would create some sort of trust for them to protect them from themselves, from creditors and or predators, so that those funds are available for the children for their lifetime.
Okay.
In which case, also the beneficiary designations would have to be coordinated with the estate plan.
And so there are things that you could do from the grave to control money in numerous different ways, right? There's techniques and trusts and all kinds of language that could be included to try and protect, quote unquote, the spendthrift from not making good use of the money.
Absolutely.
All right. That's where you come in?
Right. Yeah. There are generally three major reasons why we would want to create trust for children. One is because of their minorities.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say that. They're minors.
Minors, yes. It's not that type of show, but yes.
They are spendthrifty. Money burns a hole in their pocket, or they have some sort of special needs, or they're on some sort of state program where they need to be protected.
And I saw in researching this, you do have a specialty with special needs planning.
I do.
So that for you and your firm is an area of concentration, right?
Yes, we concentrate in that.
And given that we live in Connecticut, and I talk a lot about this on the show with clients and whoever else will listen, it's unfortunate, but the reality is in the state of Connecticut, we have a lot of our citizens moving out of state.
Correct.
And I think less moving in state. But when somebody is moving out of state, how important is it to address their will and estate plan if they become a resident of another state? The most common example is Florida. How does that work?
Yeah, I always tell my clients when they are moving out to have their documents reviewed. Each state is fairly state-specific in terms of what their laws provide. So something that we draft in Connecticut, there might be some subtleties in Florida law or New York law or Carolina law that needs to have some inclusions or maybe things taking out of it to ensure that their assets are protected properly.
Is it too extreme to say, though, that it's possible that if you had a will that was good in Connecticut and you were a resident in Connecticut and then you become a resident of another state, that if you passed away, you could not have an executable will? Could it be that extreme?
I can tell you in reverse, right? Because I'm not licensed in all the other states. But mm-hmm. if someone comes to Connecticut with a will from another jurisdiction,
mm-hmm.
that will be accepted here if it was valid in the state where it was signed.
Okay.
So the will would not be
reciprocity.
I can only speak come in this way.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what mm-hmm. other states do. I think most do have reciprocity in that mm-hmm. situation, that a Connecticut executed will would be mm-hmm. accepted in that state. But again, I'm not sure what each state has different tax laws too.
And I think sometimes people that are not financial geeks like I am and the rest of my team here at Elliott Wealth, a lot of people think estate plan that they're picturing what you see in the movies where you have, you know, a mega millionaire with mansions and a trophy bride and it's this largesse process. But when we say estate plan, it's not something that's necessarily super creative, technical, not necessarily lots of money or, you know, real estate in foreign countries or anything like that. Estate plan can be as simple as a will, right?
Correct.
And what are some of the most common documents that accompany a will that are part of the estate planning? Like a power of attorney is one, right?
Very important document, yes.
So could you just briefly explain what a power of attorney does and why it's important?
Absolutely. Going back to what you said about, you know, being 18 and having a will, the way I refer to an estate plan is everyone should have what's called the Holy Trinity of documents: a will, power of appointment, power of attorney, and advance directives, which is for medical.
Okay.
So in Connecticut, Connecticut's documents are a will, a power of attorney, which is where you appoint someone to make financial decisions on your behalf. And that's a document that is most relevant while you're alive. Actually, it's only relevant while you're alive.
Okay.
Because it terminates upon mm-hmm. your death. And the last thing is the advanced medical directive, where you appoint someone to make medical decisions for you. Again, that's a very important document, most important while you're alive, because you're appointing someone to make medical decisions for you. Everyone should have at least those three documents, because that's gonna cover a majority of most of your situation going forward. Now, when you talk about more grandiose estate planning, including trust in that scenario, we're talking about ensuring that your assets pass to people the way you want them to pass.
And also with the most amount of tax efficiency.
Correct. That's becoming less and less of an issue given the expanding estate tax exemptions. But
how often do people, I'm going to switch gears slightly, how often do people come into your office where you see that they have assets, retirement accounts, life insurance, maybe annuities, stuff like that, where the beneficiary designations either haven't been made or you can't find the records of them, or they're clearly not in line with the owner's intentions?
More than half of the time I sit down with people.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest problem.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize, they think, well, my will's going to take care of it.
Yeah.
More often than not, people don't understand that their will has no impact on the beneficiary-driven asset.
So this is a great point of emphasis for people that are listening, because if I have a will, and let's just say, for argument's sake, I leave everything to my wife in the will, right, and then my children. But I have an IRA, and I name my best friend as the beneficiary, and I pass away. What it says in the will is irrelevant to what happens with the IRA.
Correct. Yeah, the beneficiary designation trumps the will.
Okay. And that's what you were saying, is a lot of people don't realize that. They think the beneficiary isn't that important because I have a will. But they're completely separate tracks, and they're independent of one another.
Absolutely. What we like to do is, whenever we meet with a client, we like a good financial picture of what their assets are. And so if we see life insurance or IRAs and 401ks, the next question is, you know, who are the beneficiaries?
Mm-hmm.
And they usually say, I think it's my wife. Mm-hmm. I think the backup is my kids. And I say, okay, you're going to want to confirm that for our next meeting.
Sure.
Because that's... You know, 90% of your assets are in your retirement.
Yeah, in a lot of instances, you could have the will might have, like, say, the house and the checking account and maybe cars, some personal effects, but you could have, like, $1.5 million in retirement accounts and life insurance that you don't even know if there's beneficiaries on file.
Right, and that's becoming more and more the norm, especially for people our age. We're socking a lot of money in away in retirement plans. Mm-hmm. And the largest asset most people that I see coming in is their retirement plans.
So that's a point of emphasis when we meet with clients and or potential clients, is we've really adopted a posture where we want to go out of our way to work with them on the beneficiaries, make sure that they're up to date, coordinate with their estate planning attorney, you know, a firm like yours, and also to make sure that there's actually a written record of it. Because one of the things we found, Mike, I don't know if you come across this a lot, with all the changes and mergers and acquisitions and technology changes over the years, if you had made a beneficiary designation a while ago, it may not be retrievable by anybody. Mm-hmm. And so then it doesn't exist. So we want to make sure that we have it, and we have, like, we have a copy of it, the attorney has a copy of it, the client and his or her spouse might have a copy of it, because that's important too, right?
Absolutely. Part of what we do as well is estate administration. So once someone passes away, we help the family marshal the assets and get them to who they're supposed to be left to. There have been a couple times where with IRAs or other annuities, the financial institution couldn't find. And we happen to have one in our file, and we presented it to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's helpful to have that spread out in as many places as possible.
Because even though they should, the institution should be doing that, they're not really obligated to do that. And in a case where you have mergers, acquisitions, or just time marches on,
you may just get lost in the mix. Right.
Okay.
The other thing we like to do is do a flow chart of people's assets to say, if you pass away, here's where your assets are going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And just do little arrows saying, this person's going to get, this person's going to get that. And kind of summarize what they're going to get upon your death. Say, well, this person's going to get X dollars, this one's going to get Y dollars. Is that what you intended? It's amazing how often than not people are surprised as to see where their money goes upon their death.
Very good. Two topics I wanted to cover with you as we kind of begin to wind down is long-term care insurance, long-term care protection. It's a little bit of an interesting topic, I think, because the marketplace for long-term care insurance is not very healthy. Mm-hmm. And it's been problematic over these many years where people that own policies have seen premium increases. The cost of coverage has gotten much more expensive mm-hmm. over the years. So what is your thoughts on long-term care when someone comes in and they, I think you would agree, they have to have a certain amount of affluence in order to even consider it because it needs to make sense financially, budget-wise. But what are your thoughts on long-term care?
I like it.
I like it.
Part of a review on estate planning is looking at long-term care expenses for a client. And if they have the financial resources, it's something we certainly discuss. I obviously don't sell it being an attorney, but I often point them to your direction.
Right.
Say, this is something that you might inquire to see what's available, how much could you afford, and how much coverage can you get under the right circumstances. But you are correct. I mean, mm-hmm. You have to have a certain level of wealth in order to look into that.
Right. So, I mean, I think for the purposes of this show, if somebody's over the age 60 and they have accumulated a decent nest egg, you know, they're not living paycheck to paycheck, check in with us, check in with your financial professional, explore, like Mike said, what kind of coverage you could get, what it would cost, does it fit into your overall plan? It's definitely worth considering and exploring. Maybe you decide to do it, maybe not, but it's something you want to be very aware of once you get to age 60 and beyond.
Absolutely. Well, you know better than I, as you get older, that the cost of those policies go up exponentially.
That's right. And then the second of the two topics I wanted to cover with you briefly is in a recent episode, I focused on stretch IRAs or inherited IRAs. Mm-hmm. And in researching the topic, which I know a lot about because we do it all the time, I saw some statistics that, and this was episode number 44 of season number 2, if you wanted to listen to it, if you haven't already, but hardly anyone sets up stretch IRAs. So if you have a non-spouse beneficiary, mm-hmm. I think only 10% of those beneficiaries set up inherited or stretch IRAs. And the number one reason why they don't set it up is that they don't know about it. And I talked on the episode that seems to be a shame because it's a wonderful wealth creation tool.
Absolutely.
It's great on the tax front, accumulating wealth, getting money from generation to generation. You must come into contact with stretch IRA opportunities from time to time. So what are your thoughts on inherited IRAs?
We deal with them all the time, especially when we're dealing with people within our demographic. You know, pushing 50 years old, have a couple kids who are...
I'm pushing 50? I did just turn 48, so I guess that's true, but that was a little hard to hear.
Hey, I'm 48 as well. But in any event, dealing with children who are, you know, teenagers, you don't necessarily want to leave those assets outright to them. Not quite sure how they're going to be with money, but we also want to plan for our deaths. So we deal with setting up a trust as the beneficiary of an IRA. And in that is the ability to stretch that IRA out over the child's lifetime. That creates tremendous wealth.
And that seems to be, I think the inherited stretch IRA is underutilized, which is an absolute shame. But then what you're describing where the original owner of the IRA before passing away could provide some control to the process by setting up a trust and setting up a stretch IRA and wrapping them together. Is that a good way to describe it?
Correct. Yeah, there's two different ways you obviously can leave your IRA mm-hmm. directly outright to your mm-hmm. children, mm-hmm. and then they have the ability to stretch it.
Yes.
Which goes to your first point of making sure that your children understand what that means.
Right.
And the second is not necessarily naming your children, if they're minors, as the direct beneficiary of your IRA, but a trust for their benefit to protect them while they're financially immature and don't understand mm-hmm. what a stretch IRA
yeah,
is.
That's perfect. Good. So, thank you. Was there anything that we didn't cover that you would like to cover?
No, I think you've pretty much covered it all.
Have you ever done a podcast like this?
No, this is my first time.
Very cool. Well, yes. You did a great job. It was a nice conversation.
It was very easy.
I think the listeners will get a lot out of this. If you want, if someone wanted to get more information about your firm, can you give a website?
Sure. Our website is www.henryfederer.com, which is the name of the firm, which is H-E-N-R-Y, and then Federer, like the tennis player, FEDERER.com.
So for regular listeners, my website is www.elliottwealth.com. If you didn't catch Mike's website address, it'll be displayed at the Elliott Wealth site. Please, if you haven't subscribed to the podcast already, you could do so on iTunes, Stitcher, other podcast platforms. You could also do it at the Elliott Wealth website. I'd really love it if you could subscribe to it. So please make my day. And I'll be back with you on an upcoming episode of the Simply Financial Podcast very soon. Thank you.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of Sage Point Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Please note, the information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information provided at these websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to your use of third-party technologies, websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of these websites, you are leaving our website and assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the websites you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through Sage Point Financial Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management, LLC, not affiliated with Sage Point Financial.
Simply Financial is part of the Exvadio Podcast Network. You can find Exvadio Podcasts at exvadio.com/podcast, the Apple Podcasts app, iTunes Store, iHeartRadio app, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever you find podcasts. So join us and stay informed and entertained.